Welcome to the Amateur Skeptics Podcast number 327. I'm your host, Brian. Joining me this evening is Mac.
Are you recording?
I am recording.
Okay.
Mad Cat is with us. I don't know what's going on there, Mad Cat.
I'm just laughing.
You know what?
You usually say, I'm going to stop the pre-show recording and move on to the show recording.
You just said let's do it. You said, are we going to get this train wreck up and going?
I did.
So now I'm introducing Mad Cat, and she can't. She's in hysterics, and we can't. We got to move on now. So now I have to move on to the dumbass himself.
Hey, don't say hysterics. Don't say hysterics. That is an inflammatory word.
Oh man,
she's not a Victorian wife.
You would not be here. You're the one being rude, saying, "Is it recording?" No history of any podcast has ever not been recorded. Everybody always starts the recording. You don't even need to ask.
In podcasts that are recorded, you admit it right there.
All right, and also the dumbass himself in hysterics.
It's not easy being this sleazy.
And again, you can't say hysterics. He's not a Victorian housewife.
Oh, but he could be.
Nope.
He could be. Dumbass, you try it, wouldn't you?
He's not a Victorian housewife. He does play one on television.
I know. Listen, we ask him a question, then we're talking over him. So tell me, dumbass, could you be a Victorian housewife?
You don't know what I do in my spare time. I keep that to myself.
Excellent. Obviously, we're right on track. Things are going well. How's everybody doing?
Casey Jones, you better watch
Reed. Yeah,
I'm doing good.
Good. I'm glad. Good to hear it. We've got new animals. Max got new animals, so that's good.
Yes.
Oh. Mabel has become a glamour snake.
Your snakes are taking glamour shots. Snake.
Ooh.
My tail with a lizard really well.
Your tail with a lizard.
Well, that's what Clint.
What lizard is this? What kind of lizard?
Nami is a green-keeled, emerald-keeled lizard. So that's a lot of tail for a little. It's just useless tail. It's just
wow. Cute. Okay.
And Clint from Clint's reptile. That's it. That's what he calls them. A tail with a little lizard on it.
When you say a tail with a little lizard, we know you're not talking about a crested gecko, because every single one of them, the first thing they do is they get home. You get them home and they get spooked and they drop their tails. You can't have a crested gecko with it that still has a tail. I don't think it's possible.
Well, they regrow that.
Maybe eventually.
You have got to see my. We have Lizzie still has her tail.
So how long is the tail? 5 years old. How long is the tail
on a crested gecko?
On the emerald keeled lizard.
Well, she's having fun zipping around on top here, so let's
just a ballpark.
It can't be as big as a ballpark.
I'm no good at ballparking.
Is it bigger than a bread ball? Is it smaller than a house?
It's smaller than a house. Of course it's smaller than a house. It would be dangerous to have something that's bigger than a house.
Well, I mean, it seems ideal for it to be smaller than the house.
Especially a lizard.
It does.
Especially a lizard.
Yeah.
They just recently found a new. I was reading, and I haven't verified it. I need to reread it, but they're claiming that they found a new. It is a fossil of a 30-foot snake.
Wow.
Yeah, I heard about that.
Yeah, and
pretty darn.
They did. But the previous one was it.
And Rick Moranis was in no way involved.
What's that?
And Rick Moranis was in no way involved.
Yeah. He didn't blow up the snake. The previous one was pretty big, and it was a boa, right? It was a giganta boa or something, or whatever it was. So I don't know.
Yeah, giganta.
Yeah, so that was a type of boa. I don't know if they said in the article what family the snake belonged to, but it sounds like it was huge.
I know. See how big you are.
No, it's okay.
Okay, she's about 3 inches. Her tail is about 8.5 inches.
8.5. So are they arboreal? Are they using that to climb trees? Is it a prehensile tail, I guess?
Yeah, she climbs. It's a prehensile. It wraps around things.
So they're probably not going to drop it then.
No. They do have little extensions looks like little itty-bitty pieces, but they can drop parts of their tail if they...
Oh, they can drop parts of it. So they wouldn't drop the whole thing?
Yeah.
Oh.
Is it like iguanas where it's got fracture planes?
Something got it that close.
I know iguanas drop their tails.
Well, they've got iguanas have fracture planes in their tails where they can drop whatever part of the tail they
that's
want.
That's exactly what it is.
Okay.
The one that
dropped the tail on my wife dropped the whole damn thing, and it was twitching on the floor.
Had her screaming.
She called me. I had to come home from work to take care of the tail. She wouldn't touch it. I had to leave work. I got so much shit for that.
Well, when she lost her tail, David had she had gotten out of the cage because our little demoness got in there, and she got out, and David got Rascal, and Rascal dropped her tail, and it was very loud.
All right. I think it's time to move on, though, unless somebody wants to tell a story about sleeping with their secretary.
I don't have a secretary.
Yeah, I don't either. See, so no tails there. I don't know. All right, well, what time is it then?
A husband, Terry. Oh, yeah. What time is it? It is time for Dumbass's Masturbation Moment, brought to you by the Dumbass Media Empire.
The Amateur Skeptics present Ian's Masturbation Moment, brought to you by the Dumbass Media Empire. The Dumbass Media Empire, bringing you content that touches people while they touch themselves.
So Dumbass, you're gonna sit here and tell me that Billie Eilish masturbates.
That is correct. She was recently interviewed by Rolling Stone magazine, in the interview, she used her celebrity to, in a way that I approve of, to promote masturbation for mental health and self-acceptance. Although, you know, that's just my paraphrasing of her. What she actually said was, people should be jerking it, man.
Which is, I mean, that is really good. People should be jerking it. What's that? I'm sorry, I cut over you there. Say it again.
I said that she says that she should have a PhD in masturbation.
Yeah, that's pretty good. I mean, you basically have one.
Of course. I think all the years that I've done the Masturbation Moment on this show probably qualify me for some sort of degree in masturbationomics.
At least a certificate, right?
Certainly.
We'll get you a certificate.
You know, I think I can easily get one from Thunderwood University, so that should be fine.
Yeah, right, exactly. I tell you what, their certificate is as valid as all of the awards I've given this podcast. This is one of those situations where when we agree what they say, we feel like, you know, that what they're doing is appropriate. If she was here, and I am a little bit surprised because she was homeschooled, and I expected her to be some sort of like closet, conservative. And this statement makes me feel like I'm very wrong about how she might lean politically.
I don't know, but people can have a mix of opinions. You know, she's apparently pretty open sexually.
It does seem that way. Yeah.
I will quote from her. Says TMI, but self pleasure is an enormous, enormous part of my life and a huge, huge help for me. People should be jerking it, man. I can't stress it enough. As somebody with extreme body issues and dysmorphia that I've had my entire life.
She says,
watching myself feel pleasure has been an extreme help in loving myself and accepting myself and feeling empowered and comfortable.
Well, and let's not forget, Dancing with Myself, Dancing with Myself, with a record selection and a mirrored reflection, I'll be dancing with...
That's
Billy Idol.
I believe he masturbates as well. It is interesting though.
He doesn't have to go far.
I think in general, I mean, I think we put too much on what celebrities have to say in general. Because if she was here being anti-masturbation, we would be condemning her. And that's fine. I mean, both I think are valid. I think in general, I mean, what these people say and do really should be of like no real value. It should be, you know, kind of a.
It kind of depends. Like she's coming at like I kind of roll my eyes when celebrities endorse political figures and stuff like that.
Sure.
Billie Eilish here is sharing her personal journey with masturbation, okay, and how it helps her mental health, and putting that out there and like normalizing it as a social movement kind of deal. You know, anything like that, I find a lot more palatable taking some hard political stance or something.
I agree with that as well. And I think the other thing here is that you're right, that somebody's asking her questions and she's answering them. And when she says people should be jerking it, she's not standing on a platform saying, you need to go home and masturbate. I don't think she's telling anybody what they should or shouldn't do necessarily, but she's certainly, this is her perspective on it. And I guess I find that to be more, I agree, more palatable than, you know, somebody standing up on their platform telling me, that if I don't believe in God, I'm going to go to hell. Right. But I mean,
right. Yeah.
Well, but the thing of it is you're hearing her. And yes, you're talking about her own life, but anybody who's talking to you as a celebrity is really talking about their own life.
Perhaps. But, I mean, there is a difference between them saying, this is how I feel about it, and this is what everybody should be doing.
Yeah.
Right. Well, anybody with any level of celebrity has to, like, think about when they, like, make statements, like, put forward ideas and try to promote things that, you know, like they have a captive audience and, it should be part of your thought, like what is and isn't appropriate for you to push along those lines. And, you know, it does seem like some celebrities aren't really careful with their thoughts on the ideas and promotion things that they promote out there. They haven't really thought it through that much.
Yeah, I don't.
But it's like it's a very hazy thing that you can't. I'm not sure you can really say that. Like some people put forth that they shouldn't use their celebrity in order to like push anything, but it's pretty much impossible for them not to do that with the way people listen to their every word and opinion.
It is political capital, right? I mean, and so they can choose to use it how they say, and as long as people are going to listen to them, you know, as long as people care about what they have to say, you know, I don't know how they completely avoid it, right? I mean, Dolly Parton has done a pretty good job. We really know very little about, you know, how she leans on most things.
Right. I personally find it strange how the celebrity culture that people, you know, hang on, you know, every single word of a celebrity and obsess over it. And I'm just like, okay, this person said something that I don't agree with either or whatever, but it's like, why are we paying attention?
Yeah. I mean, I get it. And look at a character like Mel Gibson, right? I mean,
he's a character, all right.
Yeah. I mean, it nothing would have been better for him than to keep his mouth shut. Right, it definitely hurt his career to do what he did, and he could have had those ideas his whole life, right? And if he hadn't said anything, he certainly would. I mean, he's still making millions of dollars, right? I mean, as a producer, he's been in some movies now. He's maybe not as toxic as he was, but I certainly will, right or wrong, if he's in a movie, I will probably avoid it. But yet, some of his older stuff I still might watch. You know, Lethal Weapon and some stuff like that. That I was really attracted to as a kid. But his new stuff, I might not give a chance. And that, right or wrong, you know.
Yeah, it's a big discussion to be had around celebrity, and I don't think it's a case that we should automatically say that. Oh, you're a celebrity, but that you shouldn't use your celebrity status in order to promote your feelings on something or whatever, or say anything, because, like I said, I don't think that can be avoided if you're going to like participate in the world at all. I do think that when a celebrity, you know, has a positive message and attitude that I agree with, and they're putting that out there, I want to promote that myself.
Sure. Mac, were you trying to say something there?
I was going to say just there's definitely a lot of there's a lot of us personally in here as we look at this and we go, okay, this is a good thing. There's a lot of our personal leanings that make us say this is a good thing. Whereas if she came out and said, you know, everybody should fumigate their lady parts and put chunks of stone up there, well, she'd be Gwyneth Paltrow.
Well, yeah, but then we can like put the criticism out there that what they're talking about is actively either useless or harmful, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, but Mac is making the same point that I was trying to make.
Yeah, and I do like what she's saying, that this was good for her and her body dysmorphia.
Yeah.
I like that, so...
In a lot of ways, like this is from like just a personal sex positivity thing. The fact that she chose to masturbate in front of a mirror to try, you know, I mean, I just find that very healthy. Mm. Didn't I read that in here?
You did.
Yeah.
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 It is.
She says it makes her have such a raw, deep connection to herself and her body, and that she has a love for her body that she's never really had.
Yeah. I like what she's saying. My point is still, I mean, you know, you gotta take what everything that, you know, that these celebrities are bringing forth, you know, I don't know.
It's definitely true that we've got to not just accept things that celebrities say out of hand without question. We should be wary of people with influence looking for to get us believe or support certain.
I guess, you know, if the next thing she's telling me is to vote for Trump, I'm going to feel very differently about her.
What if she just tells you to vote, period?
No, I'm okay with that. I mean, well, that's one of the...
Then you're clearly not Republican.
Okay. Well, they're mad at Taylor Swift for telling people to vote. Have you seen all that?
Yeah, that's what I'm referring to.
And I guess it's there again, they want her to stop saying that. Because she's getting her fans to vote, and her fans are not voting for them, so they'd like her to be quiet, right? So it's an interesting thing that we want more of people's speech that agree with us, and if they disagree with us, we'd like them to go back to their house and close the doors and not come out.
And fuck the shuck up.
Exactly. it's just
I like that. Fuck the shuck up.
We'd prefer that they be Greta Garbo and not them.
Right. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It's just an interesting thing. All right, let's see. What do we want to move on to here, Mac? Do you want to talk about
Silk?
Yeah,
I'll be happy to talk.
Let's talk about Silk.
Let's talk about.
Okay.
Let's talk about Silk, baby.
I was going. I heard it in my head as well.
All right, you know, Silk is a. I'm just going to come straight to the article here. Not going to give the history of Silk because, you know, you either know it or you're like me and you don't really know much about it. But they have recently started researching Silk because of its weave and the tightness of its weave as a bulletproof fabric. What's interesting about this particular thing is that this is not a new application that's been studied. This is something that was looked at by...
In a Spider-Man comic?
Huh?
In a Spider-Man comic?
Okay. I didn't even think of that. But
I'm imagining probably. That's where you're getting it from, right?
His webbing actually was used as a bulletproof shield. That's correct.
I think so, yeah.
That is true.
There was a case of a doctor back in the old West pulled an intact silk handkerchief out of a bullet wound, found that the bullet was caught in the silk handkerchief, and postulated that silk can be used to stop bullets. But, you know, in addition to that, back in the, like, the 1700s?
Mm-hmm.
Back in the 1700s. All right, so this guy published an article back in 1882, Silk is Bulletproof, in the Tombstone Epic. And a Catholic priest later would invent a silk bulletproof vest. But Gottfried William Leben, who was born... in 1646, lived till 1716. He was best known as the inventor of calculus and binary arithmetic, but he also postulated, due to the weave of silk, that it or something called gold beater's skin, which is actually ox intestine, could be used to make bulletproof fabric for soldiers. And, you know, essentially he said that silk was the most promising material because it was flexible, lightweight, and strong. And it, and there is nothing in the materials that we use as fabrics that is actually firmer than silk thread. His idea was to take silkworm cocoons and press them together to make kind of a quilt, you know, essentially to make kind of a weave where there wouldn't be any gap between the cocoons. He theorized that using this, that the bullets wouldn't penetrate, but it would tear off individual cocoons.
So how would it, would you wear this as a body armor, or would it, how would it be, what, or
you would wear it as a body armor. And now with our current technology, they're talking about making, using silk probably in place of, I mean, the deal with the Kevlar fabric is that it's tough and tightly woven, so bullets can't actually penetrate through it. If you wear Kevlar on its own, the Kevlar is not going to stop the bullet. It's just going to, it's going to, you know, go into your body with the bullet.
Right. That's why there's a steel plate generally.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But, you know, they say about Kevlar that it can't be penetrated by something blunt. It can be penetrated by something sharp, like a knife can go through Kevlar, but a bullet will not because the bullet can't break the bead.
But don't they add resin beads to the Kevlar to prevent sharp things from going through it as well?
I believe they do, but yeah. I'm not that up on modern body armor either.
Now, regarding something you said a little earlier, just a little irrelevant point, but do I have it wrong? Because I thought that Isaac Newton invented calculus.
No, Isaac Newton discovered gravity, but apparently Leibniz invented calculus.
I thought Isaac Newton also invented calculus. Am I thinking of something else that he invented? I gotta look this up now.
Yeah, look it up, because I also thought that. But is it? I don't know. Yeah, that's interesting. I thought it was also interesting that this gentleman who had this idea also had a number of other ideas as well, and he was unable to find engineers that were able to actually do what he wanted them to do for many of his inventions, and I think it includes the silk body armor.
I got an update here. Hold on. This is interesting.
Okay.
Calculus is commonly accepted to have been created twice, independently by two of the 17th century brightest minds, Sir Isaac Newton of gravitational fame and the philosopher and mathematician Gottfried Leibniz.
Okay, there we go.
So they both, okay, that's cool.
So they both invented it independent of each other. What's interesting, you know, it kind of sounds like Leibniz was a bit like Da Vinci, where he had all these different ideas, but there were no way to actually, there was no way to actually realize a lot.
Yeah.
It notes in here that he invented a calculating machine, which he tried to get built, but he couldn't actually get it. He couldn't actually get it to a fully functioning prototype because he didn't find engineers who could realize it.
He was ahead of its time in a lot of ways. So, I mean, I know that you mentioned you didn't know a lot of the history, but do you know what silk was used for in World War II, Mac?
Well, I know it was used for parachutes.
That's what I was thinking, parachutes, yeah. And my understanding, I was told, but never able to confirm, that at that time, Native Americans actually, because there was a lot of silk available, that they actually used them to make teepees around that time as well.
I don't know about
that. Yeah, I don't know. I had heard that.
Are they still making teepees?
Well, yeah. I mean, they still do today, right? But I mean.
Really?
Yeah.
You're thinking maybe they were using, like, surplus parachutes?
Yeah, old parachutes after they had been used. I don't know. How many times can you use a parachute safely?
Many would say zero times.
Well, there are some that say that, but I just wonder, I had heard that was the case. Maybe it wasn't around that same time period, but parachutes were used to make, they'd take the old parachutes and make a teepee out of them. That's what I had a history teacher tell me that, but I've never been able to confirm it. But it does, I mean, I don't know what the time frame of that would have been, but there is some sense to that if the fabric was available, right?
It does. I mean,
but maybe the time frames don't make sense.
Yeah, the teepee is essentially it's a really, really utilitarian shelter, making a silk tent.
Yeah.
And silk is extremely insulating.
Yeah, yeah. If you've ever worn a silk shirt, you know that. It's
supposed to be cool in the summer and warm in the winter, right?
Mm-hmm. I think it's, I don't know. It's not cool in summer. That stuff sticks to you. Yeah. Okay, how about the surprising, I hate this title, the surprisingly strong link between genetics and infidelity. Now, one of the things that I had done, because I read that, because it seems like recently I have gotten a slew of articles that say the surprising whatever between such and such. And so I went and I made a whole list, and I made it last week, and now I don't know what I did with it. I had a whole list of articles that all use this same crappy verbiage. You know,
did you look for it under the title, the surprising list of number of articles that use...
Right, exactly, yeah, exactly, that article. I was looking to see if... did I put it in my OneNote? Yeah, I didn't. I don't know what I did with that list. I had a whole list of them. One of the problems with articles, I find, is that people who write the articles, they most of the time don't get to title the article. Some editor will title the article, and a lot of times they're clickbaity, and I feel like a lot of times that the title doesn't really reflect the actual information in the actual article. And this one, I feel that way here as well, because I don't think that it is such a surprising link between infidelity and genetics. I think that it...
We're talking about infidelity. We're talking about maybe people who just aren't the monogamous types, who might be more comfortable in polyamorous relationship.
I don't know that there is, that it is so surprising, but I do think, but there is an honest question to say, when people are more likely to cheat, is it cultural, or is there a genetic component? And this article suggests that there is a genetic component. So it says it established that there is a 40-60% variant in infidelity can be explained by genetic factors, and of course this is a study done on twins. They looked at two types of twins when they do this. What the article calls a MZ twin, and those twins are 100% genetic, so those are going to be your identical twins, and then DZ twins that have roughly 50% the same genetics, the same as siblings would, right? So they're not...
So the Marvel comics and the DC comics.
Sure. If you're looking to start a flame war, you could go that way. So they start by looking at
And that's the control for how much of this factor is genetic and how much might be being raised in a certain environment.
So that's what they're looking for. Right, as if they can tell it, and so they looked at the studies between the twins, what they're looking for is if one twin cheats, does the other twin cheat as well, and can they make a statistical, is there enough times when this happens that it's statistically relevant, and apparently, there was slightly more. It sounded like. The article seems to indicate that there were slightly more, they roughly found that the identical twins, that there were, that 21% of them were said that there was cheating or not necessarily cheating. Let me rephrase that. That they were having sex with another person other than their partner. This study doesn't necessarily go into whether it was cheating or not, just whether or not they had more than one partner. Okay, and so I don't, because when I read the article, not once does it say cheating. So that isn't necessarily what they're looking for here. That they're just looking for non-monogamy, in the wording, right? And they're just looking for the link here.
Society, most of that will probably be infidelity, considering that we expect people to be monogamous.
Right, but do we care? And for a study like this, we're just looking for a genetic trait, whether it's consensual non-monogamy or infidelity, kind of doesn't matter to our results. But right. I suspect that, I don't know, I think that if culturally it was more acceptable, you might see more of it. Right, but I guess this study isn't going to tell us that. But anyway, so of the identical twins, 21%, and in the fraternal twins, we see 23%. of unfaithfulness is what they use the word unfaithfulness.
Well, infidelity.
Right. In this,
that's what infidelity used means is unfaithful.
Right, but I guess, do we know that it's infidelity? Or how do we know that it's not consensual non-monogamy? And maybe they screened that out. Maybe that was screened out of the study. I didn't read the actual study, but that would be kind of an interesting question to ask, wouldn't it? In my opinion.
Well, and you know, the article's slant is definitely toward this. This is infidelity. It's not consensual.
It does. You're right. It does. Yeah, it does lean more towards the idea that somebody's cheating, right? So
that's the surprising slant of the article.
Thank you, Mac. Well, anyway, but what they did find that statistically that they say that they were able to find a link that, you know, basically in when you look at the identical twins that the twin pairs, what I think is what it's suggesting is that there was more cheating there, but I guess 38%. And so the article suggests that there is definitely a genetic component here for infidelity, but what they do say in men they can't find a single gene, right? There's not like a non-monogamy gene in men, and in women I guess that they might have a slight inkling of something there, but really it sounds like they didn't really have any strong component there either. So I think it's interesting. I do think that these studies need to, there needs to be a conversation, you know, about, you know, whether it's consensual non-monogamy or whether it's infidelity. And I wonder if you include that or exclude that, how that affects your end results.
Yeah.
The other thing about this study is that, you know, it's another one of those where it's a survey of people. And I think it was a pretty good number of people. The sample size was more than 7,000, so at least it has a large sample size. I guess. I mean, it's 7,000.
It's not like it's 200 or something.
Right. Exactly. It's a little bit better than that, but still, I don't know. So this, you know, points to the direction that, when you look at non-monogamy, that you know that there's likely a genetic component to it. What the article did say is that what your attitudes towards it, there's no they didn't find any reason to think that there's a genetic reason that would affect your how you felt about non-monogamy, and they felt that was strictly environmental. So your attitudes towards infidelity were environmental, not genetic.
A little further on down, they're talking about a study about the dopamine D4 receptor associated a greater likelihood of a one-night stand as well as a greater likelihood to being unfaithful, but it also showed that people with that receptor were also more easily swayed by food and alcohol too.
Yeah.
It could be that it's not just a one-night stand or an unfaithful spouse, but it could just simply be that particular receptor tends to be a do it and face the consequences.
Yeah, I don't know exactly how to bet. Yeah, but so this is their tentative evidence of a cheating gene, but it affects a lot more than just infidelity. That there seems to be much more associated with it, and like you say, it could have been alcohol.
I think that there was a theory back in I think the 1950s. That it wasn't cheating gene per se, but it was your cheating heart, and that it was going to tell on you.
Yeah, that was probably more likely a hypothesis.
Yeah,
but still,
I didn't see the actual research on. I just heard the song.
Just the song.
But you know, some of those songs have given us some pretty incredible scientific data. I mean, I did not know that the gravity of the Earth and the rotation of the Earth was actually affected by fat-bottomed girls until I read the works of Mr. May, Dr. May, and Mr. Mercury.
Oh boy. Anyway, I find these kinds of things interesting, but I don't necessarily put a lot of stock in them. I also think because I think that how prudish we are can have a lot of effect on how we feel about these particular types of infidelity, whether they're consensual or not, right? And so I think this study for me lacks an important component.
I wanted to go back real quick. Go ahead, Matt.
I was just going to say that I agree because our society does smack down on those kind of things. So yeah.
Yeah, and since in particular because this is research that's being done, you know, and probably and hopefully anonymously enough that people felt like they could be honest, right? But I mean, I bet you that 21 and 23% in those populations, it was probably higher, right? That's a pretty wild ass guess, but I mean, I don't know how you know. I mean, I guess it could be also lower, but I mean, I guess people could be say they're cheating when they're not. I suspect that it probably mostly goes the other way because of our, you know, brutish nature yeah. towards it.
I would suspect the same.
Yeah. So
I wanted to go back to the what you were talking about with the title of the article. I read something recently about there is a, I don't know if she's a scientist or if she's just an editor. I think she was a college teacher. Anyway, she was talking about tracking the use of ChatGPT by certain phrases used.
Okay.
And I'm wondering if that's what we're seeing with these articles is that they're using ChatGPT
to name them. Title.
Yeah, because she found certain words that were uncommon usage in other places, but were common usage in chat.
Yeah, that's interesting, isn't it? I mean, because after reading, particularly in this one, after reading it, I'm there's like no surprising link that, you know, it's like, okay, it was actually, you know, I don't know. I guess I'm not surprised at all. And I find it irritating that the title of this expects me to be surprised, particularly when the article was not written in such a manner that it would create such a surprise.
The last paragraph of the article, these studies suggest a strong genetic base is unfaithful, but they do not suggest the behavior is entirely due.
Right, so no link.
Okay. That's, you know, it's double.
Yeah. What were you about to say, dumbass?
The reason that big reason it's not surprising is that pretty much all human behaviors are a mix of genetic and environmental factors.
Well, yeah, okay, that's the other reason. Yeah, exactly, right? So I'm just turned off and frustrated by the titles that they're using. I think it's interesting. Could ChatGPT? I think that titling stuff has always been problematic, but maybe ChatGPT is making it even more so.
And I just found an article here: the surprising link between Brian's irritation.
Well, let's be clear here that clickbait headlines have been a thing for
a thing. They've been a thing forever. And here's the thing, admittedly they work. I read the article, didn't I?
She did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but prior to the internet they were not referred to as clickbait. They were referred to as unfold bait because you had to unfold the paper.
All right, dumbass. Tell me what's going on in Norway. Tell me why I can't drive my car.
Well, for you specifically, I would assume it's because you'd have to drive over an ocean in order to even get there. But
that's fair.
In the city of Oslo, Norway, they have implemented a ban on cars. So in an effort to address environmental changes and improve the quality of life of its citizens, Oslo implemented bold measures to reduce dependence on motor vehicles. With the goal of becoming a model sustainable city, policies were promoted that encouraged use of bicycles and primary mode of transportation, and now with a transportation ban. So, I was surprised to read it. It's a huge thing, and it got me thinking about, I read a few articles, none of them really go into specific detail. I'm sure there must be something out there, like explaining the transportation ban and how they're going to do things. I imagine, you know, with a lot of bicycle stuff, maybe if you like got something you want to haul, you'd have a bicycle towed thing on back there or something.
How extensive is the ban? I mean, down to what? I mean, I assume an electric wheelchair or something's fine, right?
I'd imagine so. I'd imagine like small vehicles like that would be fine. And, you know, I'm wondering, like, people coming into the city, like, I guess they'd maybe have parking lots or something around the city where people can park their cars and leave to go into the city.
I love that idea, actually, because one of the worst parts about walking around downtown, in Colorado, where I actually did walk around downtown, in Houston, I rarely go there. It's but it sucks. You know, all the cars make it kind of miserable to, as far as even just a walking place. The only place, you know, it's like you go down, we have it called the 16th Street Mall that has a shuttle up and down it, which is fine, right? Other than that, there's not their cars aren't supposed to be on that road. That I really like that design because you can get from one end to the other using the shuttle, right? This goes even a step further than that, though, and they don't even have the shuttle. It looks like it's just a walking city.
Yeah, you know, my city turned one of the main downtown streets into kind of a pedestrian mall where, you know, cars can still drive down it. They made it out of, like, kind of more cobblestone-y type material. But cars can still drive down it, but it's geared more towards pedestrians, and you can only see the occasional car coming down it now that is going slow for pedestrians. And it feels nicer. Like you can walk across the street, don't have to look as much, and just feels nicer walking around. There are places to sit. They've got like some sitting stones placed at certain places. But, you know, it is kind of nice, and I do kind of feel like, being a person myself who doesn't drive, I let my license expire years ago, and just either walk or take the bus anywhere. I feel like a city is very navigable by bicycle if you don't have that many cars around. My thoughts, I keep thinking about are like different things, like if you're going to bring like a big thing back, like what if you're buying a sofa or something? I'm wondering how that works out.
Yeah, I mean,
I guess, you know, they must have like certain exceptions. Maybe like trucks are allowed, like hauling vehicles and stuff.
Well, and it might be that there's places, like, I mean, I don't know. You've got to also think that there's got to be, you know, other ways, you know, deliveries for shops and stuff like that. So I wonder, you know, yeah, there's got to be exceptions, right?
Mm-hmm.
There has to be some.
So maybe it must be just like, maybe it's just kind of things like the personal owning of automobiles, but if you're like a business, you need it for that business, maybe that's allowed.
I don't know. Here's the thing is that we're talking about Norway. We're talking about a place it's already difficult to get a vehicle, right? It's expensive to own a car. And I think we're already looking at a place where a lot of people already don't own cars because of the cost of doing so.
Yeah, this does seem like a policy that you can only implement if a large percentage of the poor population is already towards that end where they can just swallow it.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, Norway is a place where I think that this kind of thing works because they're already kind of a little bit hostile to driving. I mean, not hostile, but I mean, it's not easy to own a car there.
Well, in Michigan, you also have St. Ignace itself, but you can go from St. Ignace to, name of the place, I had it in my, there's this island that you can go to that has no vehicle, and the only time... the first time they allowed vehicles on there was for Superman.
Okay.
The Superman big move. That Mackinac Island.
So, right. So apparently, before this, there were 350,000 car owners in the city, and they were inconvenienced by this, but. The government like just didn't do this like out of the blue. They apparently invested in the construction of more than 56 kilometers of exclusive bike lanes and pioneering initiatives in the field of public transportation.
So, is this photo from that city?
I've been trying to figure that out myself.
Because if it is, I want to direct your attention to the delivery van.
I saw the delivery van.
Yeah. So, yeah, it could be that, it's just like private ownership of auto will be banned unless they're allowed to have delivery stuff.
And I think that makes some sense. And it would make things, I mean, and then, you know, I mean, you have a city where they, you know, they cater to pedestrians, you know, I mean, you still need to have stuff delivered. People still need to be able to get their couch and, you know, get it, get it stuck in the stairwell. That's got to be able to happen.
True. I'd like to draw your attention to I'd like to draw your attention right below the picture there that Brian was talking about. There are three green links.
Yeah.
And I looked at those three links. So the first one, this turquoise fuel is of hydrogen. You know what the turquoise fuel is?
No.
A different type of hydrogen.
A different type of hydrogen. Okay, so really?
The REX car is an hydrogen, okay? REX cars are range extended electric.
So they're just an EV.
Yeah, with a gasoline engine, with a gasoline engine that powers the battery.
Okay, right. Okay, sure.
Recharges the battery.
Similar to how a Prius does things.
Exactly. Although a Prius is apparently not considered one, although the Mini Cooper Country.
All right, and the last one?
The third one, definitely the end of all EVs, 28,000 years of autonomy with this diamond battery. Well, it's an electric battery powering an electric vehicle.
Okay, so.
The point is that the article that we're looking here is a little suspect because of the other links that they're putting in there.
I agree.
That go to other things on this site.
It also, the source is Eco News. So I'd love another perspective on this. I think it's interesting. I just wonder what's actually going on here.
Because one of the things they were talking about in the article was they were talking about public transportation, and then they started talking about aerial routes. So I don't know if they're talking about busing or if they're talking about an elevated train or what they're talking about.
Yeah, I didn't get to do a lot of research. I read a few articles, and like they were all like just as brief as this, you know, mentioning it, just putting it out there. But I haven't found any kind of like in-depth analysis of what's going on here, which would have been a good thing. I'm sure there must be something like that out there.
Hopefully. It's just reading through this and looking at some of the pieces and looking at the source, you start to kind of go, boy, they really have an agenda. What's going on here?
And the other thing I'm thinking of is Oslo's not tiny.
Well, it's not all of Oslo either, right? It's a small part of it. Or do I have that wrong?
It's talking about Oslo as if it's Oslo.
Yeah, see, I don't
see anything in the article. And it's possible I missed it, but that says we're not talking about all of Oslo. This is a pilot program that covers X number of miles or X. It's everything pops up.
The article seems to heavily imply that it's the entire of Oslo, but
it can't be.
Perhaps they did exaggerate that. I don't know.
If it is the entirety of Oslo, and they've got public transportation that's making it convenient for everybody to use the public transportation and vehicles, bully to them.
I mean, I'm finding stuff for car rental places in Oslo. 10 things you need to know before renting a car in Oslo. People drive in Oslo. It can't be the whole city. I don't know what's going on here.
It doesn't say things you need to know before renting a car in Oslo. You can't.
It says the surprising link between renting. Sorry.
All right. So yeah, apparently there's more to the story here because I'm just doing a search here and I'm seeing headlines like. Oslo's car ban sounded simple enough, then the backlash began. temporary ban on diesel vehicles, that's probably not it. Norway's alleged plan to prohibit sales of all vehicles using fossil fuels. So, like, yeah, there must be more to the story. From here it says, instead of banning cars, it was deciding to ban all the parking spots in the center. This was a part of Oslo's fresh... When is this thing from? That's from 2022. All right, yeah, you're right. There is something more going on here. And like all these articles are saying kind of different things. So I guess I'd have to dig through that in order to figure that. I thought this was more simple than...
It's clearly not, right?
Is it more going on or is it that there's less than we...
Right, there's a lot more cars going on than the article suggests. Let's write this for the future.
Well... Hey, maybe this article was made by AI. Who knows? But I don't think there's enough time to get into it here. But maybe we'll look into that.
I think we should because I think this article fell apart on us as we were looking at it. It became more and more suspect.
Yeah, and that's what a lot of them do is that you know when something looks great to one person.
Yeah.
When you start looking at it with more perspective.
Yeah, it broke down on us.
You know. You find a surprising link between more people reading them and articles that turn out to be not good.
I wonder. Yeah,
there's an article about that. It's a surprising link.
It's a surprising link. Oh boy. Well,
that one's not going away.
No, it's not going away. I think it's good. So I do think that we should move on. And I think that you're going to try to convince me, somebody is, that a parrot has ever been used in a courtroom as a witness for a murder.
Well, they do. There is information about parrots, key witness, and I found a whole bunch of stuff that is rather interesting. Like, there have been cases of parrots, but none of them have been a witness as the information.
As every article says... I mean, every one of your articles says parrot key witness in murder, parrot a witness to murder. And it what's funny about that is number one, I'm skeptical right from the beginning, right? And number one, it is another case of clickbait headlines.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
There's always clickbait headlines.
Always.
But the information basically is whether a parrot can be used to testify, if it has been, etc. And there's a couple of videos in there, one where there was supposedly this parrot done or something like that. A gray.
African gray.
That started making a whole bunch of references and, talking like they normally do, and which indicated the possibility of murder, but it wasn't really a witness per se.
Right.
And there's also one I found about, can an animal be called to testify, and it was indicated by this lady. She's Carter Mario Long Law Firm. Says no, they can't be allowed to testify, of course, because they don't know, they don't understand our full language. They may understand little bits and pieces here and there, but they can't understand being a witness and stuff like that.
Yeah.
However, it has been used. Information that was heard from parrots have been used.
Sure.
I would say that
in a court of law,
you can't really swear one in.
Well, that's one of the problems that's right in the article.
Yeah, I also know that a cat can't be called as a witness. It can be called, but it won't come.
Oh God.
No.
So it's interesting here. It talks about the different kinds of witnesses. What's that? Sorry.
I'm sorry. I just said that Monroe does kind of call her.
Are you holding food?
Yeah. So it's it says that, you know, it talks about the different types of witnesses, whether it be eyewitness testimony or expert witness testimony. And there also gets into here about character witness testimony. And I would think the only thing that you could even possibly do with some of this stuff, it would be potentially show character witness testimony. Because the bird would, you know... in general, could probably give you an idea of how these two were talking to each other, right? But it's never going to be able to,
they were reacting to you.
Right.
It's going to be showing the condition in the house, although there was a case of a parrot in India that was heard saying, don't shoot, and then making a gunshot.
Which is,
which caused suspicion that the police looked at the wife because of that.
And I don't know. Is there a video? I mean, can we actually hear the bird saying that? Of course, it would probably be an Indian.
Video.
Yeah. See, so I'm skeptical of that.
What would be useful if the bird repeated the entire villain monologuing before they killed the bird?
Exactly. Right.
Well, basically, this one bird had gone through the whole references and don't shoot and stuff like that.
The Amazon gray parrot would be one bird that might be capable of doing that. I guess, you know, minor bird and other corvids also could potentially, you know, that are really good talkers. But I just am skeptical. I think that they've got to hear this stuff repeatedly right, to come up with these things. I don't think a one-time conversation is enough.
If they put a minor bird on the stand, they'd have to be really careful about how they questioned, because, you know, you have to be careful about how you question the witness who's a minor.
I also looked at, there's this one that I thought have something about it. Legal Eagle. And he does reaction shows, cartoons, video games that have anything with law.
Yep.
And explains through it.
He's very fun. I like him.
Incorrect. Done. He's great.
Yeah, he's great.
But he doesn't have anything on Parrot, so I'm going to.
Yeah. Can Parrots be witnesses in a court of law?
And the problem there, Mad Cat, is that he's not actually.
Oh man! All right. Well, I think on that,
are we gonna pick this up again when the new Law and Order comes out? Law and Order, Feathered Witness.
Feathered Witness. Oh boy.
Yeah. Kung Kung.
Anyway. Yes. Go ahead, dumbass.
Before you end, Brian, just want to go back. I did look up more on what the Oslo ban was about. Apparently, it's not a ban on like having or driving a car through the city, just on parking in the city. So they took out all the parking spaces and stuff.
Okay, so they just made it more difficult to drive into the city.
Well, that's not going to make anybody angry at all, is it? I can't think of a single case where a lack of parking has ever driven anybody completely mad.
And take a look in the skeptics section, because I put a couple of things in, one specifically for dumbass. He now has a certificate.
Oh, good.
Yep.
There it is.
Oh, my goodness. What do I have a PhD in?
No, it's a certificate. It's not a PhD. It's just a certificate. Just a certificate.
Can you give me a PhD or something? A doctorate? Can't
I could do that. I can give you guys PhDs
That is
funny.
I'm
sorry, Brian. I put you as the boss.
Yeah, I saw that. I'm implicated now.
You're implicated. What, you wanted him to have
for the profound knowledge within the lexicon of masturbationism.
I like all the little sperm on it.
You may be implicated, but don't worry.
Okay, that's for the best. That's for the best. All right, say goodnight. No, we should. Can I? We should wrap it up.
And that's another masturbation show.
If you've made it this far, that's an hour of your time you're never getting back. But the Amateur Skeptics appreciate you giving that hour to us. If you'd like to tell us how you felt about spending that hour with us, let us know at WTF@amateurskeptics.com. The Amateur Skeptics podcast is distributed under a Creative Commons Share Alike No Derivatives 3.5 license. Intro music by Peter Canold. Find more of Peter's music at soundcloud.com/PKANOL. Exit music by OFM. Find more of their music at myspace.com/OFMHQ. Artwork for the Amateur Skeptics by Sean Smith Ford. Copyright Shadow Knight Digital Portraiture.